Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Tom, I wasn't sure what to expect from this week's show with what was advertised and how far out from WrestleMania we are, and we're not coming right out of a pay-per-view, but we got some news. Number of places we could start. I'll start with the angle at the end. Edge and Edge's WrestleMania challenge, AJ Styles answering it. This isn't a huge surprise, but, you know, some people might have been holding out for something different than what was rumored. Maybe Cody Rhodes showing up or something like that. But we got AJ Styles, and then we got a pretty intense heel turn, I guess, I hope, from Edge at the end, saying he doesn't want the bitch tag team Blackie that AJ has been with Omos most of the past year. AJ said, "Is that what you really think of me?" And then Edge attacked him and ended up brutalizing him with a chair. This does, Tom, continue the streak of Edge having very intense, dramatic promos. Like, there's not really a normal Edge promo with him. The wide-eyed, breaking down, almost crying, enraged, perhaps conflicted, perhaps not character, getting a chance to show off Edge's acting range. What do you think of Styles as his challenger, and what do you think of the angle to really set it up?
So the show tonight, you know, just based on the way they introduced it, didn't seem like it was going to have Brock on it, and it didn't seem like it was going to have, I mean, your mileage may vary with Logan Paul, but didn't seem like he was going to be there, and so on. So I felt that with everything they did advertise, including this, they did a fine job of compensating for not having some of the bigger current names on there. But they did, throughout the night, I feel, undersell this Edge segment, which, like, going into the show, you're sort of wondering, you know, every Raw that we go into, we're sort of wondering, like, wonder if Cody's going to show up on this one. And so when they say that Edge's thing is going to happen, even though we're already thinking AJ, that's in the back of our minds. Since they weren't hitting it really hard, like every quarter hour, I felt that ruled Cody out. Also, you get to that point in the show, and the person who we figured it was going to be anyway hasn't been seen elsewhere, and he's a regular. It's like, well, he's going to show up eventually. So, yeah, no real surprise. But I did like, even though this is a typical thing for Edge to do, and I don't want to oversell how much I didn't think it was like the greatest thing ever or anything, but I really thought it was a nice, maybe even unique way to go into it where, you know, Styles responds, Edge is talking to the fans like, hey, I know this is the match you guys want to see. And so he's treating it like, okay, yes, this is a WrestleMania booking. This is, they're treating it almost in like an outside kayfabe sense. And then the guys look at each other, and you can sort of see the wheels turning, like, all right, we still got a few weeks to go. We've got to sell this. So it's time to start jabbing at one another. And Edge goes low right off the bat. And AJ's like, mother, what? That's what you're, how you're going to come at me? That's what you're giving me? And it escalates from there, and Edge's heel switch was just such a rapid ascent through all the different levels that he is willing to take the heat going into the match that he wants to have with AJ at Mania. And of course there's still more promo to be heard as to exactly how he's going to frame that. So I'm looking forward to that, but I felt like just for tonight that was effective, even if there are a couple ways that I could think of that I might have, fantasy rewritten it to maybe enhance the drama, to be fair, not knowing what's coming in the next couple weeks. That just occurred to me is a different way that I might have stretched it out myself.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment. First up, what do you think is the direction WWE might go? I mean, we know how AJ's going to respond. You know, I mean, he got beat down, kicked in the crotch, and chair shotted. He's going to be enraged, and he's going to have motivation to go after Edge, and he's going to talk about how this was a dream match for him, and it could have been one thing, but now Edge has made it into something else, and he's going to regret it. That type of thing. It's one-on-one. It's good. Edge, on the other hand, is he going to have any regret? How is he going to explain why he did this? Is it going to be the villain justifies his actions because the villain thinks he had to do that to bring out the best in AJ, and that he just went too far with it but doesn't see it yet? And is this sort of there's obviously WWE characters we see this with Randy Orton. You can do heinous things, but then later on you're beloved and people just sort of forget because it's like you live in the moment in wrestling and there's not really long-term sticky memories when it comes to things that people do that is sort of unforgivable. But this is pretty vile and nasty. It's hard to imagine Edge going through the WrestleMania hype for the next month and then coming out of it being a babyface anytime soon. I just think that would be jarring to expect us to be okay that Edge couldn't control himself and did this. So I'm curious if this is an indication they're committed to Edge as a heel beyond the Styles match, or if there's a way they can pull it off in any credible way that he'll be forgiven and we'll have some, you know, feel good handshake moment after a classic with AJ at WrestleMania or something shortly thereafter. So a variety of talking points there, Tom. Your thoughts on that before we get into your idea of what you might have done instead.
So it will be the second WrestleMania in a row where they have turned Edge as part of the build. And I feel like even with the vileness of the act, which I concur with, I mean, this is something that we've seen put people out for extended periods of time. And that's why I'm wondering if the next few weeks we'll see just an Edge segment where he comes out and frames what he did. Then the next week, just an AJ segment where he's still shaken, but he's good enough to appear on the show and Edge interrupts him, but he's on the Titantron. So they don't actually meet one another face-to-face until WrestleMania, or maybe the go-home. I guess I'd have to check the date on the calendar again. Let's see. Yeah, let's say the go-home. I still feel like Edge is in that realm that and AJ too, for his part, where we're still going to pick our favorites. Like, you know, just speaking for myself, I'm an Edge guy. No disrespect to AJ. He's proven himself to me, but I know that no matter what his framing is in this, I'm still just going to cheer for Edge here. So, there's a lot more meat on that bone, but I think those are the pieces I'm picking up right now.
I don't know when to trust what we hear on TV, but it did sound like the crowd was booing Edge.
Right.
I looked at the crowd. It seemed they weren't like, yay, this is a great angle and we love Edge and this makes the match more intense. Like they weren't reacting in a meta way to it. And so that's encouraging. I really hope they do just make it clear that Edge is not in any way someone to be admired for this or forgiven or play along. And part of that is AJ gets to step up. You know, he just resigned with WWE earlier this month. I had to check the calendar. Was it last month? No, we're not in March yet. Close. And he stepped up, he's committed to WWE, and I want to see him be elevated and step up as a relevant babyface act beyond the Edge feud. I mean, I think fans will accept that, embrace that more than accept it. But the Omos thing just sort of felt it wasn't a real great conclusion. AJ was kind of tossed around, not protected lately. I think fans will go with it if they give Styles clear-cut, consistent – I'm trying to think of a third C. Clear-cut, consistent, cohesive. That's the best I can.
There you go.
Babyface push and move him into some, you know, top-level matches. He's got enough left in the tank. He's really smart with how he works. He's come along on the microphone so much compared to those early TNA days, you know, 15-plus years, you know, years ago. So – anyway, those are my reaction to that too, Tom.
Yeah, and as for what you were mentioning about Edge on the other side of this, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he just disappears after WrestleMania, and next time we see him, he's framed however they want him to be framed for his forthcoming feud.
Yes. So talk about your idea.
Well, I think the issue here for me was the stated just that it was so expected that it was going to be AJ, and it was just the segment was just Edge following up on last week's excellent promo by saying, so here's the time. You want to find out who it's going to be? And it was just really simple and straightforward. So I feel like either AJ could have appeared at the end of the promo last week, or they could have – I don't know. I guess what I want is either more in the sense that Edge framed it more on the night, whether that was last week coming immediately after his promo, whether he continued the sentiment of that promo tonight before AJ showed up. I know they didn't give themselves too much time at the end there, but if they had timed it out differently. I'm trying to think, I don't know, drop the Veer is coming to Raw video package. Or give me less, frame it as, you know, it's not a big, less in a sense where the crowd has to connect with it themselves, which might, push the excitement for it in more of an organic way. Like you think of what Triple H and Undertaker did, where they didn't say any words to one another and they let the crowd just see like, oh, this is the Mania match. If they had found a way to frame it in some way, maybe Edge is involved in a six-man match, and I know he doesn't wrestle often on Raw, but commentary is hitting real hard, like, oh, man, Edge might be evaluating any of these opponents or his partners as his WrestleMania opponent, and, I don't know, stuff goes down, AJ ends up coming out, he wasn't involved in the match, and the two of them just stand, you know, stare at one another, and the crowd picks it up, and I feel like that would get a natural reaction, but those were the two ideas that came to mind that might have made it feel a little bit more less obligatory. This felt like, okay, we decided on the card and now we're kind of putting the pieces together to get there. And it's a little more transparent, but I was thinking of something that might make it a little more naturally exciting.
I think too, they just want to give Edge and Styles something to sink their teeth into for the next month. And they go to a more traditional heel face matchup because of that. You know, it, like we'll talk about Finn Balor and Damian Priest, like the crowd at the beginning, you know, it was like polite cheers for both. And I think WWE is trying to avoid a circumstance where it's sort of pick them, especially when Styles hasn't been effectively clearly given babyface momentum in any way, since, you know, lately. And so it just might have felt there might have been some ambivalence and, you know, it becomes a tennis match with polite claps. As opposed to something with intense heat. So I'm in favor of Edge going heel with some of the, you know, just kind of in general, never ending reservations I have about doing something. And then, like you said, he'll just disappear and come back and we'll just forget that happened. And he'll be the, you know, mountain bike salesman again, you know, wearing the flannel and being a nice guy. And he'll be like, well, I kind of lost my mind last year, folks, you know, sorry about that. But you know, my wife had a talk with me and yeah, man, I guess I was on the wrong kind of diet and I've, you know, cut back on the caffeine and you know, whatever. I mean, he'll just, in a way it's too late and it's right past, but it'd be nice if there was a little bit more of an obligation and consistency to the constitution of characters and more attention was paid to it and fans were rewarded for caring. And now it's sort of like, just enjoy the moment.
And you make an excellent point regarding the logic moving forward of framing AJ as a face, because you're right, the there was no turn. He just sort of was a de facto babyface coming out of the Omos tag team. And Omos, did we agree on Omos last time? Omos. I'll mess it up again later.
They've been pretty consistent for months now saying Omos, but everyone's stuck. Everyone picked one of the four pronunciations that they had initially, and everyone else sticks. So everyone's saying one of four pronunciations and sticking with it, even though WWE has finally settled on Omos.
Right. But yeah, I mean, speaking of consistency, regardless of whether Edge is around after WrestleMania or not, AJ is the guy that's going to be there every Monday night. And, you know, so yes, yeah, so the stronger characterization, you make a very good point there.
All right, let's pause, introduce the show, and then get to some calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, February 28th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. the founder, editor, publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter predating the internet, and also the editor of pwtorch.com, our main website with news and features and live TV and pay-per-view coverage, including this weekend's AW pay-per-view, and also the host of numerous podcasts throughout the week, including the Wade Keller Post shows, the Wade Keller podcasts, and some VIP shows like Everything with Rich Fan, Wade Keller Hotlines, post pay-per-view roundtables, and The Fix with Todd Martin. Thanks for joining us today. That us includes the other voice you hear, Tom Staupe from the PWT Talks NXT podcast, part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. Tom, welcome back to the co-host chair. Good to talk to you tonight.
Thank you so much, Wade. Always happy to get the invite. Yes, PWT Talks NXT live on Tuesday nights at the usual Daily Cast line. And, you know, I'll pass quickly through the VIP show NXT 8 years back because it is a really good jumping on point right now. The new episode at the top of the feed is NXT Arrival, the beginning of the takeover era. And honestly, I'm pretty proud of the job that that I and Kelly Wells did covering that one. You know, I don't usually mess that up, Wade, but when I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh, wait, which pronoun am I supposed to use here? But I think we did a very good job.
You're always safe just not saying myself because that's misused 90% of the time, especially if it comes first. You know, myself and someone is. But anyway, enough grammar.
But you know, so I think that's good, and I think you know the rapport that Kelly and I have is fun and hopefully fun to listen to. I enjoy listening back to us as narcissistic as that may be, but I do want to take a moment to highlight the new, no longer the newest. I am very happy that there is another dedicated Impact show on the Torch now, and I'm happy that Darren and Ross will be covering that. I very much enjoyed their first episode. But the second newest show on PW Torch VIP is Bonus Point, a play on NXT's new preliminary show, Level Up, which I could spend a very long time describing, even though it's pretty simple conceit. But I'll just say that it Level Up coming into existence, basically just a retitling of what 205 Live had become. It was my invitation to finally more deliberately dedicate the coverage that I offer to PW Torch toward the recruits that don't get as much airtime, who are, honestly, they've become, over the pandemic era, more difficult to track because we see less of them. We're not seeing house shows due to COVID concerns. I'm no longer going to the live events and seeing dark matches, so on and so forth, but I'm still very interested in covering them. So selfishly, I wanted to do the show because it's the kind of show that I would want to listen to, but I also hope that someone like a Harland or a Nikita Lyons or a Yulisa Leon catches on and becomes a star, and then these can be cool archival episodes to go back and see where their teeth cutting days were.
It's very cool. Yeah, you did last long as the newest show, did you?
No, it was even shorter than when we started NXT 8 years back, and then Javier started his NJPW podcast. The window was even shorter this time.
Yes. You did mention in passing the new show dedicated covering Impact Wrestling. That is back on the VIP podcast lineup, so check that out. And, of course, on the Daily Cast lineup, we also have the new PW Torch 90s Past Cast, jumping back 30 years and covering what was in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter this week 30 years ago. It is a fun mix of shows right now on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup and the PW Torch VIP feed, and it is it's cool. I want to do more plugs, but I also want to get to our callers. So let's
I'll very selfishly jammed that in. I was like, I want to plug Bonus
totally.
Point. I got to get this in here.
Yes, and I feel like I want to plug all these new shows and give everybody their just due, but maybe later in the show. But go VIP, everybody. All right. Let's give out the phone numbers, and then we'll start with Nick in Brattleboro this week. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. You can give us a call. We are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We'd love to hear from our listeners and have you join the conversation, new callers, female callers, names we haven't heard from for a while, consider yourself invited. Don't make me stand around like Edge did going, why isn't anyone stepping up? Step up, let's talk Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Just don't expect me to do to you what Edge did when someone finally did step up. Give us a call, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. If it works better for you, you can email us while you're watching Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and we'll likely read your email on the air, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's AEW. Excuse me, I just pulled up the email and started reading a random word off my screen instead of what I was going to say. The email is pwtorch. Excuse me, Wade Keller Pod. I'll get this right. I feel like Ray during his promo tonight, Tom.
Oh, like, no, like, yes.
Feeling lost out of nowhere. What's going on?
Speaking of standing around, he was out there for like how many commercial breaks and packages before they finally let him talk? So, yeah.
I don't know what he was doing during the break, but it didn't help him stay focused. So anyway, the email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I swear I've done this before, people. All right. We will get to our call now. Nick, welcome. Thanks for calling. Good to hear your voice. By the way, thanks to Zach Adorn for covering two of the post shows last week. It's post-Dynamite, post-SmackDown. I feel like it's been forever since I've hosted the live call-in show and had a chance to talk with our regular callers. So good to talk to you, Nick.
Yeah, we missed your dulcet tones. Tom, how you doing? Wade, always good to talk to you. Just want to throw in there, I think Finn Balor was out there for a good 15 to 20 minutes before his match started. That's two different commercial breaks. Anyway, I'm going to push back a little bit on you guys. I hated what they did with Edge. Corollary also with Damian Priest, it was kind of like very similar. They have 5 weeks till WrestleMania. They could have given us at least maybe a week or so of slower build on Edge. He just came out of the thing with Beth Phoenix, and it was all kind of, you know, jokey and friendly, and it's just like, okay, I'm going to emote and show my face and get all red and blustery, and then I'm going to hit this poor guy with a chair twice. No reason. I mean, even having AJ say something to him that could be construed as, yeah, you know, okay, old man, I'm here for you, or something, you know, just something, some build to him, quote, snapping. I really disliked it. I kind of was enjoying Raw tonight, and then the last 45 minutes, I just kind of, they lost me again.
I am sympathetic to what you're saying, and I'm reserving the right. Of course, I have the right. I am holding out a final judgment on this. I'll put it that way. Based on the follow up, I mean, I think that really is key. So I like the idea of Edge as a heel and Styles as a face. I like the idea of one of them as heel and one of them as face. And I like Styles as a baby face. And if Edge can help give him some a boost and elevate him for another main event run, especially now that he's re-signed, I'm for that. But I really do want – I get what you're saying, Nick, and I want some explanation that makes sense, because we did – this is so different. Tom, this is such a different Edge than Edge and Beth doing their thing that they did with Miz and Maryse. And it is jarring. It is sudden. And I think Edge can pull it off. I mean, I don't think they're asking something of Edge that he can't pull off. But, you know, they got to deliver. You know, they have to come through, and I hope – whatever Edge says next time we hear from him, presumably next week, does take into account that this does feel kind of out of nowhere and perhaps just sort of forced for the sake of a wrestling angle instead of more organic. And I do think there's going to be a number of people who feel like Nick. Tom, your thoughts?
I looked at Beth Phoenix's Twitter, And in all capital letters, she says, I'm finally going to find out who it is. And then 12 minutes later, she just says, oh, no. Yeah, you know, I do agree with you, Wade, that it really depends on where they move to next. And honestly, as much of a cop-out answer as this may sound like, I kind of want to see the whole feud play out before I judge it in retrospect. Because like I was saying earlier, I absolutely sympathetic bordering on empathetic to Nick's reaction. Like I was saying earlier, I feel like they could have stretched this in multiple different ways, or at least made it a bit more dramatic or at least gradual across the segments. But especially with the contemporary version of Edge that we've been getting, whether it's heel or face, I would totally buy if they've already written out the next 4 or 5 weeks of TV and they've got specific segments that they know they want to hit week after week. And so they've already paced something out and they just had to do the story progression tonight to get to the point they want to be at by next week. I totally understand where Nick is coming from, just looking at tonight in a nutshell. But it is a situation where I would like to look back to be able to fully evaluate in the future.
I will say, too, I think the match is going to be really good, and it's going to be different than it would have been had they just made this, you know, a dream match and a battle of two legends in their 40s. It's going to be a different style match, and you know, maybe it'll be better, maybe it won't be. You know, kind of to imagine how good it could have been had they been just, you know, two people who respect each other having it out. But I think from a crowd involvement standpoint, instead of cheering spots and, you know, you deserve it and you still got it and all that stuff, you know, hopefully we get successfully a storyline that gets fans with AJ and against Edge and the things line up that way emotionally better. And Nick, is there a way for this to work itself out where you're on board with it?
Oh, yeah. No, I want to see, you know, how it progresses. And while you guys were talking at the beginning, I was also thinking that what they could be setting up is if, you know, they've got the Brock Roman battle. If they want Brock to win and he's not going to go vanish to Saskatchewan for 6 months, then potentially you have Edge, an evil Edge, to go against good guy Brock, or you've got good guy AJ to go up against bad guy Roman. So, I mean, I don't tend to believe that WWE thinks that far in advance, but it does position some more players for the unified champion, you know, crossing across shows. So, you know, I mean, I can see, it's just, I felt that maybe 1 week of build up to it, where, you know, something, you know, that what Tom was saying is Edge is in a three-way match and AJ doesn't help him, or, you know, some trigger for Edge to he's always high strung, but it's like, I really would have liked an explanation of the trigger. Was it because AJ didn't shake his hand right away? Or, you know,
Well, hopefully that comes next week, you know, obviously.
Yeah. I mean,
there's still time for that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think also on top of the previous match, it didn't help me out at all, because they had, you know, Damian, he lost. Okay, he lost. Instead of having him snap right away, have him go in the back and start ripping stuff apart. And maybe this is all because they need to sell tickets to Madison Square Garden, and they want to drive interest in these people facing each other somehow at that in the Garden, and also want to spur ticket sales in Dallas. I mean, from everything I've heard, is they're selling, but it's not. They got 100,000 seats to sell on two different nights in Dallas. I mean,
yeah.
they've got to get people
that hellhole.
Yeah, right. They've got to get people psyched about that, you know, to get all those tickets sold. So, it's just, as
well,
I said, is I
let, let me
go ahead.
Nick, let me throw this in, yeah, for the conversation. Is there a chance, if Lashley can't go, Edge is a heel, Edge takes on Brock, wins the WWE title, and Edge AJ headlines or co-headlines night one for the WWE title? Any chance that's why they're hyping MSG and they're trying to sell tickets based on the winner take all, but it's going to turn out, all reports and spoilers aside, they actually will have two separate title matches and the belt will be taken off of Lesnar thanks to, you know, Heyman interference or something like that. Tom.
Oh, man, you really don't want it to be title versus title, do you?
I'm just throwing that out regardless of my view on that.
No, I could see there being a way that they could work Edge into that spot. I feel that, you know, was it just this past December? I did a quick Google during Raw, and I think that's what came up, that they struggled more than they historically have to sell tickets in their signature venue of Madison Square Garden. So I feel like that's the reason why they are the clear reason why they are hyping it here. The funny thing to me is that they are hyping it in such a way, you know, on television involving the Brock Roman angle, where it seems like this is something that we're going to get to see too. And I mean, clearly they would have been advertising watch it on Peacock at this time if that were the case. I also, and maybe my brain is making this up, Wade, you could possibly correct me. Doesn't MSG have some sort of rights to their content? Some special stipulation to be able to broadcast out of there? I don't know. That's completely tangential, but that just occurred to me as I was thinking that. I guess just thinking about AJ being the more consistent person coming out of WrestleMania, win or lose, I would imagine likely win. But that's part of the reason. I know Nick was talking about Edge possibly being a challenger, but that's part of the reason why I actually like the idea of a unified champion, because I don't think they're at a position where they actually want to do to dissolve the brand split. And, you know, I'm just assuming Roman is going to win his third WrestleMania match against Brock. And he's gone through a lot of opponents. And so if you unify and give him you give him a whole other roster of people to work against, and there's a whole litany of ways that you can take the Raw title back off of him, whether it's as part of a feud or whether it's to put somebody over and Roman's Universal reign still continues to historic lengths. There are all kinds of positive ways that I can imagine that going, and AJ could be a multi-month, he could be a summer-long contender in that regard. Maybe even the benefactor of it who ends up with the title in the end. So there are a lot of good ways I could imagine that going. Before I forget, since Nick brought it up, I did actually note down that we got Balor's entrance, commercial, video package, I think it was for a Bobby Lashley thing, Damian Priest's entrance, commercial, video package, I think it was for the Vince McMahon thing, and then the match finally started.
We got to put a stopwatch to that. there should be someone out there needs to be tracking the length of time between ring entrance and the bell ringing so that we have a ranking and we can, you know, we'll put Natalia on this. She likes records. And keep track of who stands in the ring the longest waiting for the bell to ring. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, or Dana Brooke used to do that, right? Didn't she used to keep all the records?
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. She was the statistician. What was the name of that? Oh, I forget the name of that.
It was with what's his name who slid
something
under the ring.
Titus.
Yeah, it was Titus Worldwide, right?
Oh, Worldwide, yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right, it's Titus kind of, World Slide, yes. Okay.
It's kind of sad that he'll still always be known as the guy who slid under the ring. It's just... I think it could be that, because they did mention very briefly, almost like as a throwaway, they said, if Bobby can go. They definitely threw that out there in the commentary about Madison Square Garden. And then Madison Square Garden, I don't know, I haven't lived in New York for a long time, but they used to have MSG Network that also had the Rangers and the Knicks and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know if that as a cable channel still exists. But I know way back when, usually like 2 weeks after the Madison Square Garden pay-per-view, you could see the pay-per-view on MSG Network. Yeah, no, I that's pretty much all I had. I mean, I as I said, I thought the show was pretty good, at least for me, up until the last two matches. I mean, I'm glad Finn Balor won. I think, they had to do something with Damian. You know, he was dying on the vine. And then I'll just also throw in the standard comment of, man, are they using crowd sweetening? I was noticing a couple times that the crowd, that section of the audience that's opposite the hard camera, just sitting there, and you're hearing all this noise, and I'm going, well, either those people are really tired and eating their hot dogs, or they're throwing in the crowd sweetening really bad. And I also want to commend Becky Lynch for taking a couple of welts on her abdomen from Bianca's hair, that was loud. That those cracks of the hair. I don't know if they sweetened those or not, but
one of them felt sweetened, but I don't know. I didn't watch it back. Maybe it just did make that noise.
It felt that way, but with a 7 second delay, I don't know if they would have been able to time it that perfectly.
Well, part of it is it didn't seem timed perfectly, so that's what threw me off. But I can't imagine. But that would be so corny. I mean, I know they've done something like that before. I can't think of exactly what it was.
The taser recently with John
Russell. Yeah, that's what it was. Yep, exactly. Yeah, the taser. Yep, that's what it was. So I wouldn't put it past them, but I would need to rewatch it before I accuse them of such a heinous production.
But I remember Tom, you, back in Full Sail, Bianca used her hair like that on Shayna Baszler and really cut her bad. There is a precedent for it. So I'm going to let you guys go. I'm sure you got lots of callers, and great to talk to you, and have a great 1st of March. It's town meeting day up here in Vermont, so, you know, all the towns get together and vote on stuff.
every March 1st?
First Tuesday in March, every town in Vermont has a town meeting. This year, because of COVID, it's an actual Australian ballot, but the town, everyone gathers and screams and yells about the school budget. And
I don't know why, but that sounds very Vermont to me. Tom, do you agree?
I spent a little bit of time there. I could see it. I could see it.
Was the second Newhart show based in Vermont?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
okay.
See, that just, it feels like that. Yeah, I don't know why I got that vibe, but go ahead, Nick. Yeah, elaborate.
Well, no, that's Vermont. It's the, you know, People's Republic of Northern Vermont. You know, we're gonna form the state of the United States of New England and just leave. But anyway, I also just want to say viva Ukraine, and everyone keep good thoughts.
Yeah, I hear you, Nick. I'm with you. It's just tragedy what's going on.
It's where
it's
my people
awful.
Are from.
And, wow. Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Yeah, we don't know how that's all going to turn out. Thanks. Appreciate the call, as always. Anyway. Nick brought up a couple other things that we'll get into, Tom, as the show progresses. I do want to get to our next caller here. Ryan in Cumberland, MD, is up next. You can jump on the phone banks if you want to participate in this conversation, 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. push 1 on your keypad. And if you do call in and participate, I promise, I can't speak for Tom, but I promise I won't hit you with a chair or kick you in the crotch.
You have to go VIP for that.
Yes. That'd be quite the pitch. All right. Ryan, thanks for calling. What is on your topic list coming out of Raw tonight?
My question's on Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. Is there a possibility that that Steve Austin match could anyway be like a tag team title match? Maybe like a Shawn Michaels getting involved since he used to be tag team partners. And I noticed Kevin Owens stomped on a cowboy hat tonight, which Shawn wears often. And I don't think Steve Austin wears a cowboy hat too often.
Yeah, what if we've been reading this all wrong and ripping on Texas, Tom, isn't to pull Steve Austin out of retirement, but it's to get HBK, Shawn Michaels, in the ring for one more payday, one more match. The paydays these days are good. We already saw a Saudi Arabia appearance. Maybe that's where this is going. Or, as Ryan brings up, a tag team. He did drop JBL's name also. Maybe it's going to be JBL and Shawn Michaels. Boy, what a weird team that'd be. JBL and Shawn Michaels defending the cowboy hats of Texas. A cowboy hat on a pole match or something. Tom, where's this going? What do you think of the names dropped tonight and if that changes anything?
JBL and Shawn Michaels, both people with authoritative history in NXT. And speaking of, when Ryan said that, I was like, oh, well, just recently Shawn Michaels did something and the crowd was chanting one more match at him, and he chuckled about it. And I realized that was for NXT 8 years back. So not recent.
Yeah.
But, I do think there are so many different ways that they can move forward with this Kevin Owens thing, regardless of whether Rollins is still involved after last week or not. They could turn on each other, or like one turns on the other, and they either go their separate ways. I'm sure both of them could remain heel going out of that, because you would imagine that's the way they want to go. Although, yet again, we saw tonight, every time we talk about these guys, there's a lack of clarity in their alignment. I was okay with them leaning face against Alpha Academy, because I felt like it was something that they will very easily be able to get their heat back on. But ideally, they would not be doing that kind of thing. So they could go their separate ways, or they could go to a tag title match at WrestleMania, even though I don't expect it. I think it's going to implode next week. And then after the match, they lose, and KO is complaining, and he blames Dallas and Texas on the fact that he lost, and then the glass breaks. Or, I suppose I hadn't thought of this going to being an actual tag match, and I don't know who Austin's partner would be, but I would imagine, and the Austin thing, like you suggested, rumors and reports aside, it's so tongue-in-cheek at this point with how obvious the Austin teasing is. It reminds me of what AEW was doing with CM Punk, where like they're telling you without telling you, so they can preserve. They're selling it without saying the name, so like you're going in and it's still exciting because you're not sure. So it feels like that same sort of thing. I don't know who the partner would be for Austin, but I would imagine it would be the kind of situation where if they were to do this, which I don't anticipate, but they would probably pick somebody on the current roster who can get the rub from teaming with Austin and also carry the brunt of the match, like the Haku for Andre kind of thing. Because whether the bell rings or not, whether this is a match proper or not, Austin will get in some mud hole stomping. He'll get in a stunner. You know, whether we can call it
spoiler alert, Tom, match, come on.
Right, exactly. You know, like the most I expect from him is a Fez press. Whether we can call it an actual match where the bell rings at the beginning or end or not, we're going to get the same level of activity out of the ultimate segment. So there's that. But yeah, I wouldn't guess HBK though.
What about Kevin Von Erich?
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, now we're talking. Scoop time, people. All right, Ryan, back to you.
Cutting questions on Amos. Saw he beat T-Bar tonight. Is there any possibility that he wins the Andre the Giant Battle Royal this year to push him like as a monster.
What do you think, Tom?
Oh, man. There was a time where, well, I mean, very recently, since it's that Battle Royal is a relatively newer development, but they did a good job right off the bat giving a level of prestige to it, with Cesaro being the first winner and so on. And then, unfortunately, Mojo Rawley won it, and it was all downhill from there. But, man, this is the first year that I wasn't thinking about it going in. And there have been years where they haven't promoted it at all, and I was still thinking, like, man, who's going to be in the entree? So I did get the impression tonight from Amas's squash match and the video package just being very general and not geared toward a feud, that he doesn't have a significant place on the WrestleMania card, and whatever he does will be very much attraction level. So Ryan, I think you're onto something there.
I thought Omos tonight gave his best promo, and I know that's sort of like saying he also had his best match. I mean, the bar is low, but there was progress. I understood what he was saying. I thought he was confident in what he was saying, you know, kind of telling, you know, Kevin Patrick. I want to say Nick Patrick. What is it, Kevin Patrick? There's all too many
that
first names.
That sounds right.
Yeah, there's just too many first names bouncing around interchangeably. And, you know, he's like, get this mic up here. And he, like, rattled off these people. He, you know, it was the This Is Your Life Omos segment hosted by Omos, you know, all the people he's plowed through. And it really was a step up. Nobody who's not watched Raw for a year would go, whoa, good promo. But they wouldn't go, this guy can't even get a sentence out. Like, and that's how we were feeling about him. So, you know, it's progress, I thought, tonight with him. And, I wanted to see if – I mean, they put so much TV time into him. He should have a WrestleMania moment. And since, you know, they're not doing Styles Omos, for instance, as a WrestleMania match, which at some point looked like that might be the trajectory you know, a Battle Royal win certainly makes sense for his character, even if that doesn't feel as prestigious as it once did. Ryan, yeah, back to you for follow-up on that or another topic.
Final questions on Corey Graves and Carmella. Do you see them, like, doing more with them on TV, like, say, maybe, like, being on this TV, or maybe even, like, to have, like, Corey Graves come out of retirement, do, like, a mixed tag with Carmella sometime in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, doing a reality show as a couple is sort of the thing to do. If you didn't know it before, Corey Graves and Carmella have a lot of sex, and they want you to know they scout their house for places to have sex, and that they're very sexual and very horny. So just that they made very, very clear tonight, so it's good everybody knows. It's kind of weird, but that's, you know, a hook for people to watch. But it beyond that, I don't know if it's just to give them a chance to, you know, be reality stars, Tom, or if it is with the idea being in mind, since we did have the news earlier this year, Corey Graves is medically cleared again. Doesn't mean that he wants to come back or will come back, but he's able to medically, you know, like Edge and Bryan Danielson and others who seem like they're retired. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't rule that out, but it feels a little more long ball because they just did Edge and Beth with Miz and Maryse. So, what, Corey and Carmella against a babyface Midge and Midge? Midge? Edge and Maryse? Is that their couple's name, Midge? Did I stumble into that? I don't know. I don't know if anything naturally jumps out. What do you think, Tom?
I think that the promotion for the YouTube show reminded me of one of my very, very favorite movies, Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, when John Cleese is doing a sex education class, and he just walks in and starts going, sex, 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 sex. And the main joke is that the all-boys classroom is mostly not paying attention, because even though he's going into very lurid details, it's still school, and so they're still just messing around. But, I love that movie so much. Doesn't get enough love. But anyway.
What's the right age to introduce someone to that, by the way?
Well, I saw it when I was in, I'm going to say ninth grade was when I saw it. And yeah. I didn't understand a lot of it, but it has stuck. And you can put that on at any moment, and I will I'll sit there and watch the rest of it. And annoyingly quote along. But I feel like this is just a content opportunity that, you know, from their podcast and how public they are about their relationship, Corey and Carmella were just, it was a good, willing subject to become more content to drive people to the YouTube. And yeah, that's just the impression I get from it. I have not heard anything. I don't get any sense for Corey's desire to get back in the ring, if there is any, whether he is training, trying to get his chops back, because it's been a while. I mean, you know, talking about NXT 8 years back, I think we have maybe a handful of further Corey Graves matches, maybe like two more Corey Graves matches to cover here and there. But they've already made mention of him having concussion issues on the television. And I think I looked at the history of his matches, and we've got like one or two left before that's it for him. So it's been almost 8 years since his last match. And for whatever it's worth, almost every match that he's had, Kelly and I review it as like, well, that was boring. we weren't too lit on fire by the wrestler that Corey Graves presented himself to be in NXT anyway. I don't know about Sterling, whatever his name was before, when he was tagging with Punk, I believe. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I feel like Carmella would be carrying that. I don't know. I'm not going to watch their reality show, but I enjoy Corey enough as a personality, and I am genuinely a Carmella fan and really like what she brings to the table, that if they did that, I would at least be interested. I have no sense for whether that's a possibility, though.
Yeah. All right, cool. Ryan, back to you for anything else.
Just a thought on that. I did see Corey Graves wrestle one time live in Johnstown against CM Punk. He picked up the victory, and I thought that was a pretty decent match, but that was like 20 years ago, so I don't know if he'd be able to pull something off.
Wow.
That was great.
Crazy. Yeah, I didn't expect to talk to someone who had seen that match that time you imagined might have happened in some form or another. Ron, anything else you want to bring up?
Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate it.
Cool. Awesome. Good to hear from you. All right, 347-215-8558. You're still welcome to call if you're live streaming us. It is March 1st on the East Coast, so happy March, everybody. And push 1 when you call so that we know you want to be on the show. Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com if that works better for you. Oh, and don't forget, it would be awesome if you enjoy our show, if you took a moment to give us a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. That helps our search returns. And it's just, you know, makes us feel better. You can do that for both this, the red brand and the blue brand, search Wade Keller, and click 5 stars on both of them if you think we are worthy. If you don't, let us know how we can improve. We definitely enjoy hearing from our listeners and feedback, even if you're not a regular contributor to the show in other ways. All right. Up next is Justin in Charlotte, North Carolina. Justin, thanks for calling in and pushing one. What's on your mind regarding Raw tonight?
Yeah, how you doing, fellas? You know, I feel like the last few times I've called in or emailed, I felt like I've been very negative, and I don't really mean to come across that way, but is it just me, or does it just feel like WWE is just kind of like coasting right now? You know, it's WrestleMania season, and every Monday I turn on Raw excited, but about midway through the show, it's just like, so I'm just basically waiting on Cody Rhodes to come out or Stone Cold Steve Austin to come out. Like, I'm not really actually excited by any matches that's promoted. I'm waiting for some rumors or reports from online to happen on television in order for that to be what ignites my excitement for the show. What do you guys actually think about the entire show? Are you guys excited for Mania, or is it kind of like, well, it's 4 or 5 weeks left, so let's see what they do?
I have found myself in kind of a middle lane, which I think they've found a groove and they're delivering it consistently. The roster is deeper than it was, 6 months and a year ago. And it feels kind of like a drive-through meal where that whatever state you're in, you kind of know consistently what you're going to get. sometimes the fries are a little oversalted or a little cold, colder than you'd wish, or, you know, you don't get as many ketchup packets as you hoped, whatever. But it's still within a certain framework of what to expect. And I think it's just been more consistent in that way. So I find myself not having really strong negative emotions, but not really strong positive emotions, because they are just sort of in a certain groove, doing what they do with who they have. And then it just sort of comes down to, because it is polished, it's smooth. They know what they're doing. You know, we make fun of certain things that they do, the language, the you know, wrestler entrance and then the long break. They do all that stuff for a reason. It's overdone and sort of ridiculous. But I also understand the rationale for doing it. And it just sort of comes down to, are you a pro wrestling fan who can be entertained by the talent and you know, just sort of relax your way through watching the show? It doesn't feel like an adrenaline rush, but I thought there were some things on this show. You know, the Edge turn, I don't think everybody saw coming or thought it would be that done that way. The Damian Priest turn, even if for a while we're thinking, when is it going to happen? It wasn't obvious we're going to get a U.S. title change and that happening. And I just think the wrestlers kind of know who they are and are delivering consistently. It just feels like a product that if you're at all into it, whether it's whatever aspect of the show you're into, if this is for you, you sort of know what you're going to get every week and get something that's not – there's not a big standard deviation week to week compared to, I think, past years and past eras. So I don't have like a strong emotional reaction to Raw these days like I have in the past. I just sort of settle in and know it's going to be a smooth show that is consistently what Raw is these days. Tom, how do you feel about that question? I think it's interesting – to get different people's perspective on it. And, you know, if it's not for you, it can be frustrating. And certainly, Justin, on your calls, it's been that way. So, Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree that it is not explosive. And, I mean, and that had decreased even, you know, 10 and so on years ago. But even then, they would still have their nights where you're like, oh, my gosh, that was incredible tonight. And there was like a major unexpected story development, and that, and you can't do that every night, but you know, the explosiveness is no longer there. There is a sense that they are on autopilot to an extent. And there have been times even just very recently where I will fall out of habitual viewing because there are just so many endless rematches and they don't seem to mean anything, or, I'm actually not that much of a detractor of DQ finishes in general, as long as they're in the interest of telling a storyline and it just doesn't feel like a total cop-out. If I can isolate a DQ finish and justify it in the storyline, I'm usually okay with it. But even then, they tipped the scale so much recently that those two factors, the rematches and the DQs, contributed to me falling out of appointment viewing. And I would, listen to to this podcast and to the hotlines, and I would watch some YouTube highlights if I was so inclined. But right now in the build to WrestleMania, just relative to recent WrestleManias and sort of discounting 36, since that had the general curiosity of how they were going to approach it, which was for me extremely intriguing. And I still really enjoyed the podcast that Zach Haydorn and I did, his On the Canvas, about speculating what WrestleMania was going to be like and then comparing it to what ended up happening. And then ultimately what became the Thunderdome, because a lot of the ideas that we have that we had on that podcast ended up being implemented in the Thunderdome. But just thinking about the build and thinking about the storyline, I feel like this is probably – the WrestleMania, and in some parts it's easy to say during the build, but it's also really easy to be in the middle of the build and just go like, oh, I'm not excited at all, which I've been there before as well. I feel like this is probably the Mania that I have anticipated most out of the last handful. And a lot of that is because of the intrigue of Brock and Roman. And talk to me, you know, talk to the Tom that was watching the build to the last Brock Roman main event, and I would have been disgusted. But the characters have flip-flopped their alignment, and I feel like the storyline is just really engaging, and I can't wait to see that. And WrestleMania, you know, I'm the type of person that always gets pulled into the spectacle of it, assuming they live up to it, there was the 1 year, was it 35, where they just had a big rectangle screen, and I was like, really, that's all you got this year? Come on, guys. But I like the spectacle, and I feel like as much as I don't know, I shouldn't try to speak for a collective, but as much as people do complain about a lot of novelty being on the WrestleMania card, I feel like we still are curious about seeing it. Like, whatever this Pat McAfee thing is going to turn into, I mean, come on, I think that even the people that are complaining about it would be lying if they didn't want to see how it was going to turn out. So I feel like there's a lot of that going into this card, on top of other really promising matches like Becky Bianca and the story going into that, and like Edge AJ. So I'm engaged with the build, and I am at a place right now for those reasons that I don't want to miss an episode of the build to WrestleMania.
All right, Justin, back to you. What'd you think of what we had to say about that?
I guess I can kind of see it, but for me, like he brought up the past WrestleManias, usually it just feels like somebody's new challenging for a title or some element of freshness. Like the 36 one, you had Rhea Ripley and Charlotte, that was fresh. Last year you had Sasha and Bianca, that was fresh. McIntyre going after the title a few years ago. You don't really have that on this card, in my opinion. You don't have that new up-and-coming star facing a proven commodity within the company. You just have a bunch of rematches. And I haven't got your guys' thoughts about this whole – well, I guess you just brought up the whole Pat McAfee and Vince McMahon. It's like, we doing this? Like,
yeah.
Vince McMahon? I mean – I don't know. It just doesn't have that excitement. I guess why I'm asking is because WWE is actually coming to my town in a few weeks. They'll be here in SmackDown, they'll be here in Charlotte in about a couple of weeks. And, like, last time they was in town, I went, and it was a good show. But this time I was like, should I go? If I go, how many matches are we going to get? You know, we're going to get two or three matches and a bunch of promos. It's just – it just doesn't have.
Yeah,
that. I
well, guess
that's
what you're
gonna
get.
You don't have that. You don't have, yeah, especially a SmackDown show. So I'm conflicted. You know, I haven't seen Roman in person at an event, and Ronda Rousey and some few people on there. So that kind of got my interest. But I guess that's what this Mania is missing. It's missing that element of this new star who they've decided they're about to push to the top. They really haven't developed that person in the past 12 months, and I guess that's what this Mania is missing to me, where it just feels like you could tell me this was a crown, they were building to a crown jewel show in October. You could tell me that's what they was doing on television, and I'll buy it. Like, this feels like you could say this is a Saudi Arabia yeah. show in October, and I will be like, oh, okay, this is what it feels like. It doesn't have that Mania feel to it, and so I'm watching it because I'm a fan,
yeah.
but...
Well, anything, I mean, we certainly got more than a month to see if they can, you know, win you over and build this up to feeling WrestleMania-like. I mean, I want to give them time to do that. I think they're on course for a WrestleMania-worthy lineup. I don't know if blockbuster is the word, but WrestleMania-worthy, I think they're getting to the point where there's, you know, three or four matches on each night where you look and you go, all right, I think this will feel like a WrestleMania, a WrestleMania worthy night of action, both Saturday and Sunday. But you know, the hype can get stale or get heated up or just tread water or whatever. We've got more than a month to go. So more time for that. Anything else about tonight's show, Justin, that you want to bring up though?
Okay. I guess I was kind of surprised, like, watching that six-woman tag match. I was surprised they had Bianca and Becky as physical against each other as they were, knowing they still have 5 weeks to build. Were you guys shocked by that? I mean, we see people in tag matches against each other, but it seemed like they had a lot more interaction than you would normally see with a big match that they're building for Mania. Did that catch you guys' attention at all?
I was not shocked by it. I mean, they've wrestled before. So it's not like, you know, whoa, they need to keep them apart. This is, something they should be saving. And they do have a very, they have a big money TV contract with 3 hours to fill every week. And having them in a six-woman tag as a way to have them interact but not overdo it. And the match wasn't super long, and everyone took turns in the match. So I don't think they overexposed it. And they got the spot in where, you know, Belair's whipping Becky with the long braid, and then Becky selling it and retreating. And, you know, they're really trying to make Becky seem like the heel. So, I wasn't shocked by it. I don't, you know, this isn't the 1980s and not most of the 90s where, you know, you can afford to keep the top wrestlers apart until the bell rings on a pay-per-view. You know, the reality is they want to draw ratings. And I think putting them in a match like that, giving a teaser of what they'll do and whetting people's appetite is to be expected in this era. Tom, how about you?
I actually really liked what they did with Bianca and Becky tonight, assuming I'm reading the tea leaves correctly here, because last year, just overall on the main roster, they have kept Bianca's braid whip very special. She does not pull it out a lot. NXT, she would use it every single match. It's like the opposite of what they did with Lacey's Woman's Right. The Woman's Right was one of my favorite finishers ever for reasons that I won't bore everyone with yet again. I've gone down that road many times on NXT. And then on the main roster, it just didn't get it. It was completely tarnished. But the braid whip has been kept very special, and I feel like the last time I remember her using it was in her main event against Sasha at last year's Mania. So before the match, Bianca said she's got a long overdue KOD waiting for Becky. And so that put in my head, I hope she does not hit it on Becky until
right.
WrestleMania. Make me want to see that. So in trade-off for her not hitting Becky with a KOD until WrestleMania, assuming they stick to that, assuming I'm reading that tea leaf correctly, they gave us the braid whip. And Becky sold it like she had just been sprayed by acid. And importantly, well, again, assuming I'm seeing it correctly, importantly, she was screaming, "That's a weapon! That's a weapon!" So I'm now wondering if the storyline will become a stipulation where Bianca will be DQ'd if she uses her braid, or if she has to like tie it up, or something, some manipulation that Becky will have. So all of that is what I saw in their physical interaction tonight, and I really liked what the ingredients that it put into the soup of their forthcoming Mania match.
Yeah, I think that's well put, adding some ingredients to the soup. And again, sometimes I think the standard people hold WWE to, and I'm not picking on you specifically, Justin, is there's an ideal scenario that does not take into account they have 3 hours to fill, that they get paid a lot of money for, and they have crowds who they're trying to sell tickets to and giving them an experience where they'll want to come back. And that means in this era, putting top stars out there, and in a perfect, like, well, not perfect, but in a different alternate universe, you could keep top stars apart. You'd have a deep enough roster to not have to give anything away. But as Tom pointed out, sometimes when you give something away, you're actually whetting people's appetite for it. But sometimes I think the standard WWE is held to is, you know, it's as if they don't have 3 hours to fill and a live audience that paid money and tickets are trying to sell for future Raws and ratings to keep the network happy, in addition to building the pay-per-views. And that's where they are now, and it is a compromise from what pro wrestling used to be like. And it's neither better nor worse necessarily. It's just different, but it is reality. Yeah, Justin, back to you.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. As far as that, maybe I do hold them to too high of a standard. We building up these matches as these big time matches, and It's a match we've seen multiple times, as I've mentioned. Stop, Wade. Don't worry. I'm not going to keep bringing that up. But when you give me a match I've seen multiple times, and then they're wrestling each other four or five.
Justin, she said, "I haven't wrestled you since last year." She didn't say since SummerSlam. They kind of covered
for it,
I think.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But for them to be wrestling on television again, I just thought, you know, I know what you guys are saying, but it's like, just, I mean, don't get rid of most of your women's division. I guess, you know, don't release as many women as you did and find, you know, find creative ways to build it without them. I mean, you're not going to see Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar in a tag team match, you know, before WrestleMania, you know what I mean? And so, and they just did it on SmackDown basically with Charlotte and Ronda. So I guess, you know, this is what they're doing,
yeah.
But I don't know. You know, I'm watching the product. I'm usually pretty positive, but I guess I just haven't been the last couple of weeks, so I'm just going to keep watching shows, and maybe one of these shows hook me, but it just don't got the WrestleMania feel to me 4 weeks out, and I'm very interested to see what those ratings are tomorrow because, I mean, what was really to hook people other than the whole Edge thing with AJ Styles, which we all knew was going to be AJ Styles, so I'm really interested to see what that third hour did. Would you say, wait?
Yeah, the hype for Edge, you know, was not relentless during the show, but I think WWE just, I mean, you know, SmackDown, it just, it does what it does. You know, it did 2.1 million and change last Friday night. I think WWE is just in a mode where they have tons of money coming in, they're going to be fine, and so they're going to just do what they do. And that's what we get. You know, there is a bit of cruise control. We know what we're doing. We've got talent. They're reliable. They're not, they don't create drama. If they create drama, they're worth it, and we have it managed, and they've earned it, and they have a crew that they believe in, and they deliver their product. It's not amateur hour what WWE does, you know, with rare exception if there's a project that they're invested in, you know, an Omos type situation, you know, and they plug those pieces in and they move forward with that approach, and it's good enough for them to not think that they need to be just acting, you know, desperate with, you know, I mean, and the Edge thing is, you know, the Edge thing was sort of the equivalent of Tony Khan teasing something. I mean, the idea was, and they hyped this, Edge will, you know, will someone answer Edge's challenge? You know, that was a ratings hook that they built up on their website and on social media. So they're not like giving up on it, but there's also not the sense of like desperation or their whole week will be ruined if they don't pop a rating or pop an hour. Anyway, Justin, any closing words from you?
No, that's it. I'm keep listening to the show. Appreciate you guys taking my call as always, and you know, we'll see what they have in store. I want to go to that show on the 18th, but I'm going to need a little bit better television to get me there.
Well, they take that as a challenge. Let us know how it goes, Justin, and if you go, we'd love to talk to you.
All right.
Cool. Thanks. Yep, you have a good night. All right. There's an email that jumped out that has a similar headline to Justin's, one of his topics. Scott from Tampa's subject line is this WrestleMania season? 2 question marks. He stopped at 2, not 3. Usually I do 3. I have nothing but questions tonight. Why is Edge so angry? Why did AJ kill his dog or something? Are we supposed to now be excited about this match because Edge decided to go John Wick on AJ all of a sudden? Matter of fact, is anyone really excited about any of the Mania matches outside of Brock and Reigns? Are we really in WrestleMania season? Because it sure doesn't feel like it. What has happened to this company? Or is it just because I'm now 30 years old and completely jaded by Vince McMahon's booking that I'm not into any program outside of Reigns against Brock? Sorry for so many questions. I don't expect you to answer all of them. I'm just expressing my disappointment and the lack of excitement for Mania this year. Thanks for reading and have a good night. Tom, are they being unfair? Is it to each their own? What do you say to people who look at this right now and are thinking, you know, or is part of it just, hey, we got more than a month to go. Like, relax. You don't want them to peak this early.
Of course it is to each their own. I've definitely been in the same position at other recent WrestleMania seasons because, of course, this is usually the most exciting time to be watching the weekly TV. And
the
there
most
have been
stupendous time.
There you go. And there have been times recently where I've just been like, did they forget what time of the year it is? Come on, guys, give me some more juice here. And so, you know, as previously stated, I'm not personally in that spot this year because I'm, yes, mostly invested in Brock Roman, which, I mean, that's the major selling point. And that graphic with the two of them, the winner take all, that graphic just looks like money to me. So I think job well done there. But yeah, I also concur with your suggestion of, you know, you don't want it to peak too early. You don't want to end up with the go-home show being the Brock Roman tug of war again, where you're like, oh, really? They just didn't have anything left, did they? So, yeah, and just in – we've already covered the Edge-AJ
yeah.
thing quite sufficiently. I think we need to wait to see what Edge is going to say. My guess is that it will circle back to his – the weight that he personally places on WrestleMania and what he wants to prove and the type of opponent he wants to face and what he – I wouldn't suspect that it's going to be personal with AJ. I think it's more about what Edge wants to do on that stage.
Nick Barbetti and Tom Colihue on the VIP exclusive Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure on Saturday on our VIP podcast feed talked about whether Brock and Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns is the biggest WrestleMania match ever, the biggest main event match ever. They each kind of threw out some of their other candidates and talked about how Rock and Austin might be overrated, not for its historical significance of those two characters headlining WrestleMania, but the storyline and where the focus was at that time contemporaneously and how it might have gotten, might be looked back on more fondly than it felt at the time. Is this in the realm of that? Is this generation's fans' biggest match ever that they can defend and tout as being that big of a deal with the winner take all, the way Reigns and Lesnar have been so protected, the fact that Reigns and Lesnar have switched roles from where they had been before. Is this in that realm, or is it sort of ridiculous overhype? Come on, people, don't try to sell us that. It's not the biggest match ever because of X, Y, and Z.
Something that Tom Colihue will say is show me, don't tell me. I believe – well, he can correct me on that. If I've crossed my wires there, I'm now thinking of another person that I follow on Twitter that says that quite often. But so I would agree that it's probably something they shouldn't be saying. That probably isn't the line, because when you say that, it immediately just doesn't sound believable. But I will be forgiving in that when you think of it, we're still dealing with the Undertaker's streak here. We're still dealing with decades of that WrestleMania history that the power of that was given to Brock, and Brock has spread it around a little bit particularly to Drew, but for the most part that has been focused on the person who inherited the big dog nickname from the Undertaker in Roman Reigns, and this is now their third confrontation. And in that sense, the significance behind it and just, I mean, Brock on his own and what he brings to the ring. And I often call him the only real draw left in wrestling as far as getting butts in seats and making money. And Roman Reigns and his not just the way that his character is creatively clicking right now and how his performances have been excellent and so inspired, but just the historic nature of his title reign and how I expect that to continue. I think that all of those ingredients do lend to justifying the tagline. But I only really started all of those wheels only really started turning once you said, of this generation, because prior to you saying that phrase, I was like, okay, well, Rock Austin. Okay, obviously Hogan Andre. I mean, are we really going to discount the first one that changed the face of wrestling and was a huge risk? And, you know, yeah, you go back and watch it now and you're like, this doesn't feel like a WrestleMania. But at the time, I mean, oh my gosh, it's such a fascinating event to go back and relive. There are a bunch of others that you can pick out. But yeah, I think for this generation, it's about as big as it gets. And that's what you want at WrestleMania. You want the biggest match that you can possibly put on with the most star power. And I feel like that is exactly what we're getting this year.
All right, let's jump to another email here. Alan from Cambridge, Ontario said, I like watching WWE, but by far the most annoying thing they do is have the camera zoom in on the person who's about to jump off the top rope, and you can't see the other wrestler until the last second. Tonight, they zoomed in on Finn Balor both times, coming off the top rope on a Priest, but you can't see Priest. Same thing with Ford doing his frog splash on Orton. You couldn't see Orton. Same thing when Styles is trying to hit Edge with a phenomenal forearm. I get why they do that. They think they're creating suspense with whether or not the person will hit their move and the viewers won't be able to see the other wrestler roll out of the way. But it's stupid. I'm trying to think back in the day who had one of the more impressive top rope moves, and it's probably RVD, and they never did this stupid crap with him. No, they would zoom out so you could see the whole ring, and you could see how high and how far he jumped. Anyways, I wish they'd just stop it. Thanks for the great podcast, Alan in Cambridge, Ontario. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate the kind words. Everybody, not everybody, lots of people have things that jump out to them that irritate them, and WWE gives people plenty of options because they're very particular and consistent and insistent on certain things that they do that they believe in. There's, you know, zooming in on someone going into a commercial break. The way that they film the top rope moves now is you know, noteworthy, as Alan points out, and does feel different. Tom, is it something you've noticed?
Yes, I'm not gonna die on the hill because I do agree that it's noticeable to the point where it makes you look between the lines of the match. But one thing they are also covering for is people having to reposition. I remember Aaliyah is the main person that I think of, and this is. I feel bad picking on her because she's improved so much since then, but this was years ago when she so very blatantly, like this is a performer who was lucky that they used these camera angles because it was so blatant that she was wriggling into place so she could take a top rope move. So that is another thing that they are working around there.
Is there anything else that's a pet peeve for you that they do or something that people criticize that you will defend?
Oh boy, that's the kind of thing that I'll need a week to write an essay on. just right off the cuff, I will 100% agree with snap zooms that they use for any move, for absolutely any impact. And even just I can't imagine being the camera operator and just constantly working that snap zoom. It's like I can't even believe this is the case. I guess we just grow accustomed to anything if exposed to it for long enough. I sometimes just don't even notice it anymore unless somebody points it out to me because I'm so used to watching wrestling like that now. But then I'll watch back an older match and I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better. I love just being able to actually see the action and trusting the wrestlers to be good at their jobs. I don't feel like the part of what they're doing is hiding. They're hiding the light. They're hiding the work. And also just trying to add more motion and excitement to the match. But it's just sickening the way they constantly work those snap zooms.
All right, let's go to James in Clemson next. He goes, as an AW guy, it's been a while since I last watched Raw. I like these emails. But I decided to give it a go tonight in hopes that Cody would accept that just challenge. I must say that WWE has once again done what they always do, which is disappoint. Gotta love the E. I have a few questions as someone who doesn't watch anymore. What happened to Riddle? I know his promos have always been weird, but what was that? We'll take these one at a time. Tom, he's practicing coloring and coloring within the lines, and then they do a bit where he does a marijuana joke about having dry mouth and did he say he has a munchies or something? And maybe it's because of getting stomped last week, whatever it was. And this falls in what I say about they're in cruise control. They have a formula. They drop people into it, and then the writers have to figure out how to write something for them. I don't know where this falls on the scale of success for Riddle and Orton in having something that seems amusing and charming and fun, banter between them. How did this work for you this week? And do you ever feel sympathy for the writers and the wrestlers involved knowing they have to, you know, fit – you know, dated marijuana allusions into Riddle's, you know, puns and plays on word into Riddle's promos. Does that work? It's on brand. It's fun. Or is it eye rolling and forced and not as witty as apparently some people in WWE think it is?
Do I ever feel sympathy for the writers? Yes, absolutely. Every single week I feel sympathy for the writers. Even with segments that I enjoy, like last week's NXT with the video dating thing that recurred throughout the night, I enjoyed it. That humor with that tag team, Briggs and Jensen, has been working for me. But boy, you can just imagine Pritchard pitching that and being like, oh, I remember video dating services and we'll have them do this and this and this. And I'm just like, oh, God. And then people actually had to write it. And you know, thank goodness it came out the other end as something that is widely criticized, but something that's at least working for me personally. But yeah, the riddle segments, I will admit I've come to mostly just focus on how Randy plays off of Riddle in them. A few years ago, I finally got it with Randy. If you go back to Evolution, when you say somebody's being shoved down your throat, it's become associated with the babyface version of Roman Reigns. But that's how I felt about Orton back in like 2002 or whatever that was, 2003. And it took me a long time and, you know, a hiatus from watching wrestling regularly as well to come back and realize like, oh, I finally get the smart way this guy works and sort of the genuine way that he imbues his natural way of feeling about things into his character. And I've actually become quite captivated by watching Randy do just about anything. So that's what gets the segments by for me. But as far as if Riddle was speaking to just about anybody else, it would be far more eye rolling. I do still, I think the conversation still exists. Like, for all the potential that Riddle has in the ring, does this character lend itself to a world title level? And I'm not sure that potential has completely eroded, but I do worry that every single week he is doing segments like that, it erodes a little bit further.
All right, his second question is, good for Finn Balor, but it's hilarious that the announcers made it sound like the U.S. title is better than the Universal title. We've talked a little bit about it in the context of other things, but this is a good avenue to talk about Finn Balor becoming U.S. champion and Damian Priest turning heel. Edge sort of stole the headline as far as a heel turn. We can, you know, should they have done two heel turns on one show is one aspect of this. What do you think of the renewed push for Finn Balor? Does it feel significant, or is he just sort of a guy who's around to help Damian Priest turn heel and get his belt back in a nasty way and be elevated going into and perhaps coming out of WrestleMania?
Definitely the latter for me. I admit I am I'm not sure, maybe biased is too strong a word, but just over the years of watching him, I have become incredibly bored by Finn Balor. With few exceptions, I feel like every single match he has is the exact same match, and his personality basically doesn't exist. You know, it's you could say that about like half of the male NXT UK roster, but you get that on the main roster with Finn Balor. It's just a dude in trunks who has a few signature moves that he always does. And it just bores me to tears. And I haven't felt any fire behind him in a long time, except for the occasional like tweet that you'll see trend where somebody's just like, oh man, WWE's really done Finn dirty. I can't believe he's just out there losing to people or whatever it is. Which again, just from sitting where I'm sitting, I can't argue. I look at him as a good hand type. That's just how I would view him if I had the booking power. So this decision did surprise me, as it seems to have surprised most everyone. But I came out, like, even before the actual heel turn occurred, I was looking at Finn with the belt and I was thinking, this has to be more about Damian Priest's character. This title loss has to be a step forward for his current character. And sure enough, we got that right away. But it absolutely felt like, for as much as commentary was putting it over, and yeah, I mean, I suppose you could go too far, but you do want the belt to feel prestigious, you know, on the same night where Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins are looking at the tag championships as simply a stepping stone to getting on a pay-per-view card, premium live event. I am one of the people who has been a proponent of getting rid of the pay-per-view name. So yep. There I go. But I think that was all done, even commentary putting it over the way that they were, in the interest of making the heel turn more impactful, even though I agree with Nick's earlier point that that they should have, at the very least, put it in separate hours of the show rather than back-to-back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Not really excited about Finn Balor as U.S. champion, but who knows? Maybe after all these years, he's the old dog, still has a trick he can show me.
Yeah. I mean, I with their roster that they have, giving – like, I feel this way about T-Bar. Like, couldn't you have given T-Bar, like, a couple wins on TV, a few wins over the last couple months, so that Omos T-Bar, something you can actually proudly advertise a week ahead of time and say, T-Bar's been on a hot streak, Omos been on a hot streak. Is T-Bar the guy who can step up? He's the biggest opponent Omos has faced yet. And you can still do the same match, or you can actually then do a more competitive match, although that's asking more of Omos than they probably want to at this point, and get more out of it. My point is if someone's on the roster and they're taking up a roster spot, get the most out of them you can, even if you're crossing your fingers and faking it when you start pushing them. And Balor getting a win over Priest, he's a talented legacy star. Well, international legacy star, not WWE legacy star. But he's got credibility, and he's got a cool ring entrance, and he's going to give you a good match. So, you know, get something out of it. And I thought they did here. I think if you're going to have Balor on the roster, push him at this level, you know, as someone who can win any match that he's in, especially a U.S. or IC title level match or lower. And he did here. And now I do think this mostly was for Damian Priest, but Balor, I think, is a good person to put in that spot. And then with Priest, we finally moved to this next stage. I didn't want to, you know, it seems like they've grown self-conscious enough about the Damien inside of him and that whole thing that got really corny. They've moved away from that, but they didn't move away from him going heel. I will say, I didn't think his promo was like executed particularly well. It wasn't awful, but there was a little syntax or cadence issue. He kept saying one word, and you could tell he kind of meant to say another, I thought, and mm-hmm. was sort of self-critiquing as he went. It's just not, you know, there's always something holding him back from in terms of his in-ring work and his presentation and his promos. That just is a notch short of being where, at first glance, you think he should be. And I think that continues. But I think getting him, you can't afford to give him the push he's had, the rub from Bad Bunny, the title reign, and not do something to try to get him in a better place. And I think this was getting him to a better place, even if it wasn't as red hot as it could have been, with a better execution from Priest on the mic and maybe a little bit better buildup of Finn Balor than what felt like just sort of a placeholder title shot on TV. I guess that made the title change a little more of a surprise. So I guess, Tom, your current take in reaction to tonight on Priest and what I had to say about him.
100% agree with where you're coming from on all of that. And honestly, I have yet to come up with anything too new to say about Priest. I always say the same thing about him. I am so impressed with the subtleties that he exhibited in NXT as both heel and face, when they just had him being a dark, mysterious, cool guy who, yes, spoke sometimes, but always in pre-taped video segments. And he had a genuine cool aura, and being able to watch him up close from multiple front row seats over his NXT run, I just noticed these subtleties that, you know, you only notice if you're sitting that close or if you've got the cameras in a close up on him, that I really felt sold his character well. And when you put a mic in his hands, it just doesn't translate the same way as he's trying to get those scripted words out. So I do feel like there is a way to present him. And even though, I mean, on paper, I love that they have put as much steam behind him as they have for the past year or so. He's had on paper a very good call up relative to the usual. But yeah, it just, a lot of it does not translate. And you know, I'll just circle back to the Balor thing. I personally am just really exhausted from Balor, especially due to his repeated prominence in NXT. But just objectively, totally agree with where you're coming from there. And I did think the same thing about T-Bar, during the Omos squash, where I'm not even that big of a Dijak fan, and I had been routinely critical of certain elements of what he brought to the table on our NXT Daily Cast, but still, just with the skill set that he does have, whether or not he's ever going to improve the things that I think he could stand to, it's still a guy that you could do exactly this with and give him a little bit of a U.S. title run, even if it's less about him and more about the people that he's getting over, either in loss or victory, you know, tonight in the case of victory. But yeah.
And James also says, okay, WTF to that Edge segment. Why bury AJ like that? Even if it's a long-term swerve and Cody shows next week, could you not use anybody but AJ there? The whole thing was such a waste of time. 3 out of 10 for me. They have not earned another watch next week. So he definitely saw the angle with AJ differently than I think that would be intended, and that we intend in the way we looked at it, not as a burial, but as a way to just put fans on his side for, you know, a kick to the crotch and a bunch of chair shots, get heat on the heel. And then, you know, AJ cuts a spirited, passionate promo in the next week or two, and they set up the match. I would be shocked if that was to write AJ out of the storyline as someone who stepped up to the challenge but couldn't handle Edge, and now Cody shows up. Doesn't make any sense storyline-wise for Cody to be the one, at least not as I'm thinking of it now, to come to AJ's defense or step up to take on Edge. I think that'd be weird and very risky. I think we saw a commitment to AJ tonight, Tom.
Yeah, I will admit that it ran through my mind briefly, mostly as a like, I wonder if other people are thinking that this could be a moment for Cody to come out to save the day. But that's just positioning yourself for fan revolt. You know, AJ has enough strong fans that, you know, you don't want to see him be the one that's swept under the rug for that kind of thing. I think overall, we've covered it extensively. Overall, I was okay with this particular element of it. For the sake of drama and getting just Edge's solo reaction to his own actions out there, but just for one other thing to add to it, since it's coming up again, it is the kind of thing where, like, maybe a group of officials should have come down and started trying to shoo him from the ring. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's sort of like, okay, is nobody going to come out and try to stop him? But, you know, it's like, I get why they do it, but you still think about it and it makes it less believable. So,
yeah, no, a lot of things are done in wrestling today that are a derivative of a derivative of a derivative of an original idea that made sense in its execution that had believability to it, where promoters would go, you know, because there used to be 4 angles per year. We had 4 angles on this show. You know, wrestling, the pace of wrestling booking used to be a lot slower. And when something like this happened, the jobber locker room was always closer to the entrance, and the jobbers would run out and the heel would beat them up. And then it would take another 20 seconds or a minute. And then all of a sudden a few of the mid-card guys would run out, but kind of not all at once. And then the heel would fend them off. And then finally one of the lead baby faces would run out and the heel would run away. It didn't necessarily set up a feud between them, but that top baby face was sort of always on standby, and the heel would then flee the scene. And that would add a little cachet to the baby face and make the heel look like a chicken, but give the heel enough time to execute that angle or gloat about what he just did to his poor foe. And there would be an explanation storyline-wise, and the announcers would be outraged, but there would be this sense that, you know, there are people coming to the rescue as fast as they can, but the jobbers just have nothing going on, and the other wrestlers are a little busier, a little further away. And now, I mean, the pretense is gone. And it's, you know, a crutch. It's a crutch for lazy bookers to go, well, people know it's not real anyway, so they're not going to watch with that level of scrutiny. And if you apply that to every movie or TV show, unless you're doing some sort of farce or parody type thing, it would make the shows weaker. People know everything, you know, a scripted show, a TV show or movie, it's scripted, but they don't want thus the writers to not work hard to make scenarios be more believable within reasonable parameters of entertainment. And, you know, pro wrestling promoters just don't try that hard anymore. Or they pick things that, you know, that they do care about, but not others. You know, AEW still lets a heel attack a babyface before the bell, and then the referee just calls for the bell immediately and rewards the heel for the pre-match attack. And I think that's a lot more dumb than invisible cameras. And I hate invisible cameras. But the idea that a referee would reward a heel by going, well, you just beat up the babyface before the bell and blindsided him, let's start the match now, is super dumb. So WWE actually, I thought, handled that better tonight. Who got beat up before the match?
Tonight?
Was it tonight or I thought it was in a match that I just saw recently. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to picture in my head. Was it
something with Rude and Ciampa?
No, it was Tony T-Bar. Right. Yeah, it was T-Bar. Omos attacks T-Bar beforehand, drags him into the ring, and the ref says, I can't start the match if he's knocked out. And I'm like, yes. I mean, like, I almost cheered when I saw that. That's what should happen. And then they gave T-Bar a little bit of time to recover, and then T-Bar's like, said, give me a minute, which is fantastic. That's what anybody would say in that circumstance and should say. But then he nodded and said, I'm good to go. So you're kind of like, okay, he's reasonable, but pride is on the line. He's worked up. He wants to get back at him. He doesn't want to look like, you know, he needs 10 minutes recovery. And then Graves said that might be the worst decision of his career, and the match was on. But they tried to cover for it, and that worked for me. So there's things there that they're inconsistent or spotty on, but eventually they come to their senses, and I thought they did here. They bothered more. I wish AEW would get better about that. And, you know, they do less of the invisible camera stuff where it's like there's no way those people would be saying that if they knew they were on TV, but they know they're on TV, so it's dumb. They've moved away from that. There's a whole thing in the 2000s where the writers are like, oh, who cares? It's fake. No, your job is to not remind viewers of that and let us get immersed in the whole kind of narrative structure, have the rules of engagement that you follow and you respect. And I don't even know what the point was that started all that, Tom. But Edge and the people running. Yeah. So, yeah, just, yep. I mean, I think sometimes they need to be reminded of it. But, you know, these are human beings who are there to serve their boss and get a show written, often with the boss ripping it up or changing things at the last second. And, you know, it's not an excuse. I'm just saying sometimes they're like, we haven't cared about this for a long time, and we're a billion-dollar company. We're not going to start trying to care about it this week. We have more important things to do. Or we don't, but no one will notice if we even bring it up. And the last time we did, somebody rolled their eyes at me. So, you know, it's the culture.
Yep, I'm with you, man.
Yeah. Okay. Cody Rhodes has been brought up. We got an email on him from Lee and Caerphilly. You got to give me the phonetics. Caerphilly Wales. I'm ashamed to even try to say that. Caerphilly, Wales, UK. Good to hear from you. And he said, hey, man, I've been listening to the pod, and a thought occurred to me. What if Roman Reigns wins the Undisputed Championship, appears on the following night's Raw, gloating that he's the best, that he's beaten the entire company, no one's left, and then Cody Rhodes appears? The significant Monday after WrestleMania surprise, or after Mania surprise. And WWE makes no mention of signing him, and off to the races with an invasion angle, and possibly Chris Jericho or someone following him over. Food for thought. Okay, so, and he says, go VIP. I agree with that. It won't be Jericho. He's got, I think, a couple years left on his deal, and he said that. But that's fine. I don't need a multi-person invasion angle. I'm fine with just Cody showing up. And I don't think they need to pretend like he's not supposed to be here. It'll just feel like the AEW co-founder leaving and choosing to come here with something to prove. I don't think you need to recreate the whole Nash, what's going on here, is this a shoot type thing. I just don't think you can in this era. But – you know, Cody showing up as a babyface to confront Roman Reigns the night after Mania, Tom, is that possible? I mean, I think it's certainly looking now like it's going to be after Mania if Cody shows up. Certainly, I can't get into – I don't want to say too much about the circumstances of my reporting on him, you know, being destined for WWE. But I've said, you know, there's not a press release yet, but that's you know, what's happening. So I think – after WrestleMania seems likely, and boy, dropping him into a feud with Reigns would be an attempt to get their money's worth out of it.
Yes, based on your excellent reporting and you know, not just blowing smoke, it really was really excellent audio. And I realized after the fact that when I pitched you on Bonus Point, that was the day that you were communicating with Cody and doing all of that. And I looked back and I was like, oh, maybe I should have given him a day. But I appreciate you getting back to me on it. But
too high for everyone else, so I don't get back to right away. So quiet.
Hey, I've been in that boat too. I totally get it. The John Moxley interview week, where I was just like, why isn't Wade responding to anything? Oh, that's why. Okay. But, yeah, no, I think that's absolutely a possibility and probably a very appealing one. But barring the invasion angle, because I think that WWE is very comfortably rooted in not acknowledging competition and also likely not viewing AEW as competition, won't go too far down this rabbit hole of a tangent, but I kind of agree with them because I feel like what they present as pro wrestling is very different, just philosophically, fundamentally, very different from what WWE presents pro wrestling as. I feel they come at it from such completely different angles that that it really is like two different genres of entertainment. So I'm inclined to mostly agree with WWE there, even though there are, of course, some flaws in the generalities. So I don't think that WWE will even want to go as far as to do something like with the Radicals, where I don't think they ever acknowledged where they came from, but
right.
We knew what was going on. So I don't think that's what's going to happen. I feel like, you know, Sami Zayn mentioning AEW that one time in his electric chair segment, and the fact that they're calling Dean Ambrose, John, they're calling him Mox now,
yeah.
Pat McAfee. I feel like that's as far as we're going to get. And maybe I'm – do I want to say I'm predicting it? I don't think I'm predicting this, but I feel like Cody Rhodes will have a new – you know, they got to call everybody something, and they're not going to revert to calling him Dashing or anything like that. They don't want to invoke that. So I feel like they could call him the Revolution Cody Rhodes, and that would be as much acknowledgement as we're going to get.
All right. Dean from Bridlington, England, I think that's a little easier to not butcher too badly, says, everyone seems to be talking about the WrestleMania unification title match as though it will lead to a single championship going forward. I'm not sure where this definition has come from, since it's not the one commonly used in boxing. In boxing, a unification match is where both competitors hold rival titles, for example, the IBF and WBO titles, with the winner being recognized as champion of both organizations. Doesn't mean the belts are merged, though. They're still separate championships. I look at the WWE article about the WrestleMania match, and it doesn't explicitly say there will only be one title going forward. Where are people getting this idea? Thanks for your time and great content. We do have a story up at pwtorch.com tonight, just talking about how, you know, WWE does, if they go through with all the, you know, appropriate caveats, plans change, and there's red herring sometimes. But the idea is there's still going to be two championships eventually, one representing each show. That's what is the intent of WWE, whether they have a unification that comes through with one person holding both belts for a while or not. Take that for what that's worth in this. And that, but I bring that only because I can't not bring it up given the context of Dean's question, which is, yeah, I do not sense – even though unify to me does in sort of a common use of the word, unify to me sort of means two things becoming one, not two things being held by somebody next to each other. And I think that is my answer to Dean's question, is unify sounds like two things that become one. That's almost the inherent in the way the word sounds. So that's where it comes from. If you're not a boxing fan, and you know, WWE used to call things that were a draft, a lottery. I mean, they just use terms loosely and inaccurately, you know, and championship contenders match with no apostrophe to tell us what they're even going for. We can't trust their use of words. Tom, your thoughts on that? Does it seem like false advertising? Does it seem like everyone should get it? Or do you not even agree with the premise?
I feel like it's similar to when, not every year, but on certain years when they build to Royal Rumbles and they build to Money in the Bank matches, where they don't specify which championships the winners of those matches can challenge for. Is the NXT championship on the line? Can you challenge either brand? And sometimes it's vague going into it, and that gives them some wiggle room. Maybe they haven't finalized plans yet. Maybe they don't want you thinking about that. There are different reasons every year. I think almost every single year you can look back at it and see, oh, that's why they didn't specify in that particular direction. And like when Brock had the Undisputed Championship, they created a whole new belt for it. When I believe the most recent time that they unified the belts between Cena and Orton, for a while there, it was still the World Heavyweight Championship belt and the WWE Championship belt that the champion would carry around. They would carry around both. It was Brian Orton and then Brock. I'm forgetting someone in there. Cena. Yeah. Right? Well, anyway. But they just called it the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. It was one championship that was represented by the two belts until they did finally retire World Heavyweight, and then and The Rock unveiled the one that we're still using now. Well, I guess it's with the different color in the background to represent the brand. But yeah, I think it's just, you know, it means something different every single time depending on what they have planned. And so I don't blame anyone who's concerned about that, because it could mean that. But just looking at where things lay, like I said earlier, I really just think this is going to benefit the furthering, benefit the near future booking of Roman Reigns as the top champion of the company, and open up some new challengers for him, and possibly then allow him to give two different rubs rather than just one at the end.
All right, Zach in Texas follows up on this conversation well with his email. We have seen a glimpse of the future. Tonight was an example of what Raw is going to look like post-WrestleMania. Regardless of who wins the title unification match, Raw is almost certainly going to be without a centerpiece champion for a large portion of the time. The six-woman tag was indicative of the fact that they don't intend to use the women's division to help prop the show. Tommaso Ciampa is already just another guy, which is the only thing you can be when you're feuding with Dolph Ziggler. If they think Cody can carry Raw, if he comes in, I think they are overestimating his abilities. Raw has always been a long three-hour show. Now it's going to be an even longer three-hour show. USA Network cannot be happy about the state and future of the show they're paying tens of millions of dollars for. Zach in Texas. So, you know, whether USA executives are sitting around thinking about the championship or not, I mean, there's, you know, reporting that they care. They each want their own champion. You know, that may or may not be true, or strong, or it may not be the way it's framed may or may not fully represent how passionately they feel about it. Or if it's more of an aside, or like, we get our own champ, right? And that was said once, and then it just lives on forever within WWE's innards of management and creative. So with that kind of framing of it, I do believe that it won't be long that Raw and SmackDown won't have their own champion. Is there a way to make it work with a floating champion and have Roman Reigns work twice a week? Yes. Roman could be involved in two feuds at once, but WWE just doesn't really do that. And I don't know that Roman, frankly, wants to be working twice a week with the amount of money that he has and the place that he's at, the amount of money that would take to keep him happy. And not risk overexposing him as great. I mean, I talked with Cam about this on the Raw Post Show last week. I mean, it just, I don't think WWE wants to be in a position with the big money they're getting from both Raw and SmackDown to not have a top star holding a top true world title level belt on both shows every week involved in a feud that focuses on that, on a talent that's based in that show. And I don't think they're going to have one unified champion feuding with two different people at once. I just don't see them doing that. So I just think the belts are going to be separated, and they have in mind how they're going to do it, and it'll happen relatively quickly if they do end up having a finish that leads to one person walking out with both belts, and they'll try to do it in a way that doesn't feel like they've ripped away all the hype and build and all the things, you know, people paying to see the belt. They're not saying the belts are going to be merged forever. We're going to have one title on both shows. They're like stopping short of that with their language, but they also don't want to do something that feels so cheap and temporary that, you know, Cena retirement stipulation that's undone a week later or whatever. They don't want to make people just feel like suckers and cheated who drove or flew to Dallas and paid big money to be there for history. So it's a conundrum. As for whether Cody can carry Raw, maybe he can't. He hasn't proven he can, but there's been moments in AEW where he seemed like a real big star who was on the way to doing that, and it didn't happen. Did it not happen because it's not something that's possible for him? Or did it not happen for other reasons, Cody's fault or not? And if it's Cody's fault, can Vince McMahon go, I want to turn this guy into a star. I know it didn't work in AEW, and I know this is high fiction because Vince isn't watching AEW. But, you know, if Vince believes in Cody and wants to build Raw around him, I don't think you can rule out that Cody couldn't be a centerpiece top attraction for Raw. based on Cody's history, but you would also be wrong to think it's a guarantee, or the odds are great it would work, but I don't think you could rule it out. Because I do think Cody has special charisma and can work the WWE style adequately enough against good competitors to fit what WWE seems to be looking for these days. Okay, so there's some of my thoughts to Zach's email. Tom, you can grab on to anything there.
I sure hope that they give Cody at least a crack at the top. When I did return to wrestling after the aforementioned hiatus, he was the main guy that stood out to me on the mid-card. I was like, oh, I've got my eye on him. I feel like he's going places. And for as critical as I have been, as very critical as I have been of AEW, when I have tuned into the show to in the interest of trying to be fair, because if I'm going to be so critical, I should probably watch it on occasion. When he's out there, he does have a special charisma to him. He does carry the scene, and yeah, there's been a lot of awkwardness that has come along with that in recent months, especially. But he feels like a star, and one of the main positive visuals that I was like, oh, there was something there that I remember when I think about the few things that I have liked about that brand was the cage match that he had against Wardlow, I believe it was, and just him standing at the top of the cage looking out at the crowd at the end, and just at the time and earlier than that, the connection that he had with the crowd as the founder of the Revolution, as it were. So I do hope that they give him a crack at the top. I feel like in a way similar to, although in different context, but in a way similar to Drew McIntyre, he did prove himself at a much higher level away from WWE. And, you know, I guess he even had a similar mission statement to McIntyre. So that's probably a connection a lot of people are making. But yeah, I hope he at least gets a shot. Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything you said about the world title scene. It's probably a pipe dream, but one consolation I might add is that perhaps the period for which Roman is focusing on the Raw Championship, assuming that does come to pass, maybe that'll give an opportunity for the Intercontinental belt to get elevated a bit over on the other show. So maybe there's that silver lining, perhaps. But, you know, the email also mentioned Tommaso Ciampa. Tommaso Ciampa got new, very generic-sounding music tonight, so that's just further evidence that this cross-promotion is acting as his call-up. I'm liking what I'm seeing from him on Raw so far. He is being conscious to try to remain himself while working more of the main roster work rate rather than the just constantly pedal to the metal that he likes to do in NXT, which will be better for his health long term, of course. I have, you know, as much as I do enjoy his individual matches, I will always say, like, come on, man, you don't have to be exploding out of the gate in every single second. You've proven yourself to us. But yeah, it's for as exciting as Ziggler has been on the NXT side of things in this particular feud, he is the obligatory call-up foil. There are so many call-ups that they just end up feuding with Ziggler for 3 months. So I definitely get that. But at least, you know, tonight was probably the most NXT has ever been cross-promoted on Raw, and that's something that you and I always talk about, Wade, and I was very pleased with how they hyped up tomorrow night's match and spotlighted a little bit Bron Breakker in the video package.
Two quick things for me to wrap up. One, what do you think of the 24/7 will they, won't they crushes and kisses that we're seeing in the skits? Is this harmless entertainment that some people might roll their eyes at, but it's short and it's short and over with quickly and relatively pain-free, or is it like something more than that or less than that?
Totally harmless. It's the 24/7 division, so doesn't really matter. And I enjoyed Tamina and Tozawa planting one on each other, or, you know, Tamina on Tozawa, as it were. You know, tangentially, I don't know if Dana was supposed to bounce on Reggie's trampoline. That's the one note I actually took down about the entire segment tonight. She bounced on his trampoline, and I'm like, I don't think we're supposed to know that's there. You know, the Sin Cara thing, like, I think we're just supposed to think that he magically leapt up into the ring. So, but she did a cute little bounce off of his trampoline.
Yeah.
So there was that.
I guess I have two other things. One, maybe by the time most people are listening to this on download, there'll be a story out there. I have not checked or heard if Randy Orton's legit injured. But the frog splash from Montez Ford led to Orton not positioning himself near enough the ropes because he was in tremendous pain to even put his leg on the bottom rope, which led to an awkward finish. And then he was clutching his upper left chest area, which, I mean, I think was freaking people out. Is he having a heart attack in front of us? Montez looked worried. The ref looked worried. Riddle kind of played up the storyline, but also then started to look worried. And we didn't get an on-site correspondent report about how he was helped from, or, you know, how he left the ring or if he needed help or anything. So as we've been doing the show since Raw went off the air, that news might get out there. But that is concerning. One, you just want Randy to be okay. Two, it really could mess up a lot next week's Raw that they've been building up, that tag title match, the triple threat, and WrestleMania plans. If Orton has, torn rotator cuff or his shoulder popped out, because we know that's been an issue, it popped out of socket just from pounding the mat once. And I've had dislocated shoulders before from playing karate and basketball, where it just, you know, once it slips, it is more prone to doing so. And you really, to this day, I do weight shoulder exercises to reinforce the muscles around my left shoulder. And so it might be something like that. I don't know, but if he is going to miss any time, Tom, that is a big blow to a central storyline with Riddle and Orton in the tag titles getting a lot of hype.
Of course, I'm making a specific assumption here, but if it is a concussion protocol thing, which is immediately what I thought after seeing, even before the three count and everything with every single person involved clearly checking on Orton, even the opponents as they do while they're trying to celebrate the match and get the pinfall in, still talking to him and everything, just the way that Tez collided with what appeared to be Randy's head. They wisely did not replay it. I didn't think I was going to mention this, but I'm reminded now. I have been actually disgusted by how they have replayed and actually worked into storyline Riddick Moss's, Madcap Moss's, because that was a horrible mistake on his part. He was trained to wrestle by the best wrestling training school in the world, and he made a horrible miscalculation on a move that he was supposed to take differently. And not only was he allowed to continue the match, but they've continued to replay it as if it was like this big shock thing. So thankfully, they did not do a similar kind of thing here, because that really, like, that's one of the things I really credit WWE with a lot, is that they have such a practiced and routine high standard for care in that regard. And I felt like they really betrayed themselves with the Riddick Moss thing. But here, yeah, I thought it was wild that this episode tonight started with them promoting a match for next week, but flagging that and building it up throughout the night really makes it feel like next week's tag triple threat for the title is going to be a big building block in at least one, but probably multiple WrestleMania matches. And now I'm wondering if it's a concussion protocol thing, if Orton is not going to be able to be involved anymore and they're going to have to switch something up on the fly. Hopefully it's not even more serious like you suggested. But I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of that SummerSlam with Triple H and Kurt Angle, when the match opened with Triple H. They collapsed through a table and Angle was out on his feet right away, and Triple H had to just like walk him through the rest of the match. And they were at the end here, but Tez immediately had to just like get Randy in position, and honestly probably shouldn't even have been moving him around, but they had already planned the finish where Dawkins was going to push the foot away from the rope and everything. So,
yeah.
It's tough to think on the fly in those situations. But definitely concerned for Orton there. Looking forward to further reporting.
Finally, is Vince McMahon going to be on Pat McAfee's show to set up an Austin Theory Pat McAfee angle for them to have a match at WrestleMania, Tom? Is that what
Yes.
this is all leading to? Okay.
100%. I would be surprised if Vince answered a single question, like real question in earnest. I think it's all going to be an angle, and it's all going to lead to McAfee versus Austin Theory. There would have been a time where I would have suspected that McAfee would pick a representative to wrestle on his behalf, but no, this will be McAfee, and he'll probably do a Canadian Destroyer.
Yes, totally. Yeah, this makes a lot more sense now. I mean, Vince hasn't done a sit-down interview for over 2 decades. Austin Theory brought up the knocking the papers out of the interviewer hand episode. I mean, Vince was a different person then and the same person as he was then in so many ways too.
Yeah.
I feel like a sucker for thinking that Vince is like, you know, past Vince, come on, Vince, do my show. Like Steve Austin, you know, said to me once if I was on his show or he was on mine, but he's like, yeah, it's an Undertaker, you know, if you do my podcast, but I don't want to bug him. And it's like, I bet McAfee, if he wanted McMahon on his show, wouldn't mind bugging him. You know, like, that's a big enough.
Right.
Show. He's like, come on, Vince. You're going to do it one of these days. And Vince finally goes, WrestleMania season, Vince. Come on, do it. Give me an hour. Give me a half hour. And Vince like, all right, I'll do it. But, you know, better not create too much trouble, Pat.
I liked that on SmackDown, Michael Cole was talking up that Pat landed Vince. And Pat just probably very honestly said, I think it's just because of the Brock one.
Yeah. And so I felt like a bit of a sucker, you know, now, because if it's going to be this Austin Theory angle, thinking we're going to get anything out of Vince, but I'm still holding out hope that we get more. We do get Vince answering a question or two, that we get some pretense of an interview, even if it's, you know, they talk about it ahead of time. And McAfee says, you know, just like, well, can I ask you, with WrestleMania coming up, you know, did you ever think when you started WrestleMania be this big and you'd be doing it in this long, or, you know, do you have a favorite WrestleMania moment, or, you know, just some softball questions, but things we never hear Vince get asked. And you know, I know we're not going to get, you know, a super incisive, like, I can't believe he asked him that. And oh my God, Vince really opened up and it was, introspective and revealing. We're not going to get that. And I get that, but I'd like some pretense of an interview before, you know, McAfee asks the wrong question and Vince gets upset and then Austin Theory leaps on McAfee or vice versa. So anyway,
it's not going to happen, but if there was, as we were previously talking about, if there was, or as we were previously emailed about, if there was ever going to be a situation where AEW got brought up specifically on WWE TV, this would be it. It would be McAfee asking Vince directly what he thinks about AEW, and then Vince just glares, and that's when Austin Theory jumps.
They're not going to turn AEW into the question that leads to a match. No way.
No, absolutely not.
But you know what? It would be cool if McAfee asked him, you know, what do you think of AEW? And Vince gave a gracious answer, you know, which is, you know, we're doing better than we've ever done. And we're very proud of our product and the business we built, and our partners are happy with us. And we do sports entertainment. We've faced competition from people doing pro wrestling before. There's things that they do that I've said, and people in our company have said, we think are bad for getting advertisers. And I don't think that they should have to do the things that they're doing in order to appeal to a large group of fans who are looking for something different than what we do. And there's room for more than one player. And then, you know, kind of in a self-deprecating, joking way, go, but I hope we destroy them and they're out of business soon. Are you happy, Pat? You know, I mean, like, I honestly think there's a way to play that and be gracious, but also Vince McMahon in the end. And have everyone just come away going, you know what, I feel better about WWE now. They acknowledge it. He was classy. But in the end, he broke into character. But did he really mean that? Probably. But we won't know for sure. But we know for sure. And have some fun with it. And they could do that. And that'd be the right setting to do it. And then it's asked, answered, and done. But they're not going to, you know, I shouldn't say they're not going to, I doubt they will. And I don't know that Vince would even want to be that gracious, to be honest, and give that much time to AEW, but
agreed.
It would justify the hype and generate some news and just sort of get that monkey off the back of why won't WWE acknowledge them? Cause they are a big enough deal. You know, what's the harm? Just in that setting, just acknowledge it. Who cares? You've mentioned Mox. You've had Miz out practically advertise Cody as a guest, as Dashing. My guest is Dashing. You're acknowledging them anyway. So just do it in the right circumstance briefly. Have fun with it and move on. All right. Anything you want to add, Tom, to anything regarding Raw?
I'm glad you had the grab bag at the end. It hit most of my remaining stuff. I'll just mention that I like it, but it is unexpected that Raw now opens with Beethoven's Ninth.
What do you think of the change in the opening?
I mean, they do it routinely enough that I don't think too much of it anymore. But yeah, I like this one.
It's like a weird time to do it. I'd rather they do it the day after Mania, honestly.
Yes, I do agree. We just watched Arrival for NXT 8 years back, and that's when they introduced the Calls For Me intro that a lot of people will remember from the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Finn Balor years. Or Finn Balor, they might have changed it by then. But anyway, when NXT was really getting hot. I think it's actually really fitting to hear Beethoven's Ninth opening a wrestling show.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we've gone long. Tom, any final plugs you want to get in for social media? Remind people of your show? Shows?
Yeah, thanks.
All of them?
Yeah, of course, NXT 8 years back on VIP and the Tuesday Daily Cast talked to us about NXT on PWT Talks NXT with Nate Lindberg and Kelly Wells and often now Doc Bruce Hazelwood. And I will again focus on the new show, Bonus Point. I didn't mention before that it's intended to be monthly because it's new and excited about it. I'm already like, oh man, I got to wait a whole other month.
The idea
is that just an easy, quick, again, a bonus point to your level up. The quick little, like, here are the people that I'm focusing on. The most recent episode focuses primarily on Harland, and rather than just going like, oh, here's what he does and here, you know, it's kind of boring. Like we do on PWC Talks NXT, because we have so much more to cover, I'm really looking at specific things that he's doing and trying to analyze like where his training might be at. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. And I think the one last way I will choose to plug it is that we can be, and we are right to be, critical of the fact that WWE is suddenly putting so many very raw acts, raw developmental acts on national TV and major streaming services, people that they had previously been harboring and just developing under wraps until they really were more of a version of TV ready, even though I think that our usual definition of what TV readiness is a bit too strict because we get to see the process now for the most part. But what I want to do instead of thinking about should WWE be putting these acts on TV is think about what we get out of the fact that they are doing it anyway. And so looking at somebody like a Nikita Lyons, who has not performed yet on the show that I am filtering my analysis through, NXT Level Up, but she is a hot topic on the NXT airwaves right now. And even if she doesn't perform on Level Up, I'm planning on covering her on the March episode because there's a lot to dig into in the very few matches that she has had so far. Looking at what she's doing well, looking at what she could do better, the minutiae of it down to, you know, a note that I've taken for the forthcoming episode is Zion Quinn doing an up and over with the clothesline with James Drake ducking underneath and not making it look believable. And it's like, okay, well, there's a specific spot that he can work on. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at.
Well, it's a way to stay ahead of the crowd for sure. Tom, thank you. You can follow me on social media at The Wade Keller. If you want to follow Strictly Wrestling, follow our brand at PW Torch. Tom, how can people follow you on Twitter?
At Tom Staup, and I welcome feedback.
TOMSTOUP. Thank you, and you're going to be on tomorrow night?
Yes, planning on it, and thank you, Wade. Always happy to get the invite.
Yes, a blast talking with you. Thank you, and we'll do this again soon.